2003 Media. I'm Campbell Barron, and this is The Ones Who Succeed. Welcome to the program.
Oh, look at that hoodie. I love it.
How are you?
I'm good, Campbell. How are you?
Good. I'm glad you like the hoodie. What were you doing 15 minutes before this?
I was testing the largest ever store about to go live on Fast Checkout, which I can't reveal the name of it yet. We should be processing in a day what we processed last month. So pretty good.
Cool. Congratulations on your success.
Thanks.
And before we get started, today on the show, I'm quite excited to have a conversation with Dom Holland. Dom is a rising star within the world of startups, as he's the co-founder of Fast, a service that essentially enables a wide range of e-commerce sites to turn on fast one-click checkout and login, which, like the name implies, allows customers to log in and check out with the click of a button, something previously limited to major players like Amazon. Fast launched publicly on September 1st of 2020 and has raised nearly $23 million in investment as of this recording. However, what perhaps interests me the most about Fast and Dom's journey as an entrepreneur and CEO was his ability to develop a loyal following within the startup community. Fast as a company has built quite a loyal following, which, as we will hear in the interview, has served the company well. In the meantime, Dom from Australia, now based in San Francisco, joined this program via Zoom to discuss his origin story, all things Fast, and of course, Dom's perspectives on the ever-changing startup scene within Silicon Valley. This is The Ones Who Succeed. I'm Campbell Barron. My conversation with Dom Holland starts now. Dom, I really appreciate your time. Great to get to talk to you.
You too. Thanks for having me.
So I'm a really big fan of Fast and what you're doing. But I think first off, if you can introduce yourself, who are you and what do you do?
Yeah, sure. I'm Dom. I'm the co-founder and CEO of Fast. And Fast is a one-click checkout for the entire internet with no passwords.
So pretty self-explanatory. I've heard you mention many times that Fast is essentially a problem that basically everyone who uses the internet can relate to. Mm-hmm. And walk me through the series of events that led up to the inception of Fast. How'd you get into tech in the first place?
Well, I feel like I've been in tech my whole life and I'm considerably older than you, nearly double your age, but not quite. I'm 33, you're 17, right? So not too far off. But, you know, I've been programming for 18 years and maybe more now and love, you know, just have always loved tech. The second I sort of got my hands on computers, I like building computers. I like, you know, building programs. I've kind of loved everything about technology since I've been able to get into it. And I've also been like quite commercial. I like to build things and then sell things. It's kind of like the way that I put my life down is just a series of building things and a series of selling them. And so I really enjoy that. How I got started into Fast, and so just kind of preface that as well, is I just like solving problems. Like I find things interesting. I like to know how things work. And I like to just understand, like, you know, one, how physical objects work, how sort of, you know, business economics work, how government works. I just like to know how stuff works. And it sort of leads to finding these interesting problems. You know, the more interested you are in how things work, the more things you find that are broken. And I've always sort of been like that. And one of those things was checkout, and really kind of like this whole identity layer of the internet that I think is missing and the internet sort of fundamentally lacks. And how I came across this exact problem is my youngest son. I've got two kids, and my youngest, my son Coda, was in hospital for a few weeks. We had my wife's grandmother staying with us, and she was sitting at the kitchen table one night, and I was watching, and she was ordering us groceries on her laptop. And sitting there at the kitchen table, and forgot her password on this huge grocery site, and just couldn't order food. Like she just literally couldn't get through and put a credit card in and order groceries. And it doesn't make it just didn't make sense that in this day and age, like passwords could be this blocker to commerce. Like there was just this little old sweet innocent lady sitting at the table with a purse out, unable to spend money because of like some random string of characters. And so, you know, I built a prototype of a passwordless authentication system, put on Product Hunt, tens of thousands of people sort of used it. I realized lots of people felt the way that I feel, that, you know, the current, you know, way of the internet is just broken, and kind of set out to solve that, and then realized that, you know, passwords are just a symptom. The reality is The problem is that every site makes us like recreate who we are, right? It makes us create login, makes us create passwords, makes us fill in their own forms again and again and again, makes us put in payment information. If we lose our card, we have to start again. You know, Netflix suddenly would not know, you know, it would be able to process our money, and neither would phone companies, and everything sort of goes haywire, right? And so all of this stuff is the same problem. It's the problem is that like we don't have like an identity that we can sort of easily take around the internet. And so that's what we built at Fast, is a way to take your identity and use it all around the internet. And what that means is that you get one click checkout, right? It means that any new store that you go to, you can just buy what you're looking at in one click, because in that one click, we authenticate you, we transfer your data, and we transfer your money, and you're done. And it's a really beautiful process, and you know, one that we're looking to expand right across the internet.
Beautifully simple, I'll tell you that. Now, you mentioned something, which was you were a programmer, and you had this idea, and you built a prototype and put it on Product Hunt, and had tens of thousands of people using what specifically? Because right now, if you look at Fast, you know, you guys are a company which has a prominent profile on the rise. You've raised a bunch of money. But take me back to this first version. What was the first version of Fast?
So it wasn't called Fast. You know, so Fast was only launched in March 2019. This was actually in October 2018 that I built the sort of prototype, right? 48 hours for the prototype. And I called it Bypass, B-Y-E-P-A-S-S. So the idea is saying goodbye passwords and bypassing that authentication method. Anyway, so I launched that on Product Hunt on like October 14th, 2018 or something like that. And so it was just it was like Magic Links as a service is kind of the easiest way to think about what it was. Fast Login, we actually have just relaunched Fast Login, that sort of as part of the broader Fast Checkout ecosystem as well. But the original, so in March of 2019, I launched Fast Login as a one-click login product. And that was essentially Bypass, right? It was essentially taking the idea of like Magic Links as a service and offering it to anyone to put on their, integrate into their website.
Okay. And so the super simple prototype, what came first, Silicon Valley or Fast? Did you move to Silicon Valley then start Fast? And why did you feel the need to do that?
No. So you probably have no idea, but I'm Australian.
You're not from Middle America? Not from Kansas?
No. I blend in perfectly with my accent, but no, I'm Australian. So I was sitting in Brisbane on March 14, 2019, and I incorporated Fast as an entity. I always knew I wanted to base the business here in Silicon Valley. And so even when I incorporated it, I actually used Stripe Atlas, which is their product for registering companies easily in the US. And I used Stripe.
Like a Delaware C Corp type thing?
Exactly. I registered as a Delaware C Corp even when I was sitting in Brisbane, Australia. I launched Fast Login on that day under the Fast.co, you know, domain name that we use now. And then I set out and I raised an angel round in Australia. I raised from some high net worth people in Australia in May 2019 and literally caught the next flight to Silicon Valley. I was here in the first week of June. And that's setting up shop since. Building a base, I really just hit the ground running and started networking when I first got here. And then I actually ended up raising a pre-seed round closed in October, so after a few months. And literally, you know, I didn't even have a visa to live here at the time. I was here on a sort of temporary 90-day visa that Australians get, a visa waiver.
Really?
And, you know, so we were fortunate to have investors that backed us. And so my wife and two kids were still in Australia until November. So I came here in June. I was, you know, here and setting up networks and setting up shop from June until October. I raised the round in October, officially went back to Australia and picked up the wife and kids and moved them over in November.
Mm-hmm. And so that is November of 2019.
Correct.
That is crazy timing in the grand scheme of things when you think about it. Mm-hmm. How has Silicon Valley changed pre and post pandemic from your eyes? Coming up on The Ones Who Succeed, my conversation with Fast co-founder Dom Holland continues. We'll be right back after this. You're listening to The Ones Who Succeed and my conversation with Dom Holland. Welcome back to the program. I'm Campbell Barron. How has Silicon Valley changed pre and post pandemic from your eyes?
I mean, Completely and not at the same time. So I actually don't think we know at all yet how Silicon Valley has changed, and we won't until the world kind of starts emerging again from, you know, from the sort of slumber that we're in now. Right here, it's like we just don't go out. Right, everyone is still kind of, you know, stuck inside and doing their own thing and very isolated. I really don't think we know how it's changed yet. A lot of, obviously, you know, everyone's doing everything on Zoom now, so it's like different from that perspective. But, you know, what does it look like, you know, in terms of the startups that are here, the talent that's here, the capital that's here or not here, you know, in all those cases, I just don't think we really know yet. And part of me is like really sad about that, because, you know, I do think that obviously, everyone that doesn't live in Silicon Valley is excited about the prospect of like the sort of democratization of the effect of Silicon Valley onto every other area. But the reality is that, you know, you can already raise capital, build businesses all around the world. It's that the magic of this place is that there was one geographical place in the world that just, you know, time and time again spits out huge, incredible tech companies, right? And that's the thing that we're not going to end up with 1,000 of these places that happens to do that. We're going to, you know, if we sort of fully democratize Silicon Valley, I think that we actually just lose, you know, that engine that will do that. And so I think that that's a sad prospect. And I really, truly hope we're not there, but we'll see.
You are Australian by birth. I am Canadian by birth. And so I feel like I can relate to you in the sense that Australia and Canada are both places that have unicorns. Mm-hmm. Canva exists and is thriving.
Yep.
Shopify exists and is thriving, right? And so it's not unfeasible to imagine that you could build a valuable company in, you know, my home country, your home country. So what specifically, and you kind of touched on this, but my question is, what specifically about Silicon Valley attracted you? And in hindsight, would you have started fast in Australia?
So I would go back and do what I did time and time again. Yeah, absolutely. I think it's, you know, the reason I came here was two reasons, talent and capital, right? The reality is we're building a consumer network scale business and, you know, we want to serve literally billions of people. Obviously, in the next few years, we'll serve tens of millions and hundreds of millions of consumers. Now, Australia is a country of 25 million people. And so at our largest scale, so even things like, so our two biggest tech companies, Canva and Atlassian, private, Atlassian's not private, but our two biggest tech companies that you sort of think of, and the hundreds of millions of users, right, is they're just different business models and they don't have to sort of cater to that type of scale, right? And they're our unicorns. Also Afterpay, again, but like, and Afterpay is a great example of a company I think that has done phenomenally well. Australian company, 5 years old, worth, I don't know the latest stock price now, but, you know, $17, $18 billion, publicly traded company, you know, phenomenal success taking sort of US finance companies, you know, by storm. They've got 10 million consumers that use the product, 10 million consumers, you know, in aggregate. And so our largest companies just don't have to operate at that scale. And, you know, our country's census is the number one application, the highest demand thing, because you're measuring 25 million people and it breaks every time. So we don't have a great track record for engineers building at the sort of scale that we want to operate, right? Let alone lots of them. And so purely just from just to give us the best chance, I just wanted to hire engineers and teams of people that have built at this sort of scale before, because they're the best equipped to build this sort of platform. And the reality is that there's one zip code, you know, or a number of small zip codes in a tiny geographical area that has the highest density of these people working and operating. And that's, you know, San Francisco and the Silicon Valley Bay Area. And so it was a great choice. We've got an incredible team of like really amazing people and, you know, continuing to grow that. And then the capital standpoint as well, again, you know, highly concentrated area in terms of, you know, venture capital for, you know, consumer network scale businesses again, and sophisticated investors that understand this sort of, you know, the journey that we're going on. And so that was my reasoning. And, you know, we've had tremendous success in a short amount of time. And I literally just don't think, you know, what we've done since November last year, right? We're talking about like 11 months, 10 or 11 months. What we've done is, I just don't think we would have been able to do anywhere else in the world in that amount of time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that totally makes sense. And how reluctant or not reluctant was your family to kind of come along with you? I mean, I highly doubt that they wouldn't, they would just stay in Australia. But it's a big move.
Yeah.
And this is kind of something that's not talked about, right? Because if you were in your 20s, single, this would be, I would guess, a lot easier to just make the move. Yeah. You have kids, I'm guessing they're in school or preschool, and you have a wife who has friends and family. And so talk about that side of this.
Yeah, look, I think you got to be partly mad to do what, you know, to do what we do, which is always a benefit. But you know, my wife is you know, much different profile to myself, and you know, and yeah, we've got kids and we've got, you know, different priorities. I mean, even just the sacrifice of, you know, from June until November last year, I pretty much lived in a different country to my family. You know, it was, you know, that's tough. Once COVID hit, my wife and two kids went back to Australia for 3 months because, you know, quality of life here. They were living in an apartment in the city and trapped, you know, in a 2-bedroom apartment with two kids. And so it is difficult, and far more difficult on them. You know, the other thing is during COVID we're in a brand new country, and, you know, my wife and kids only got here in November. They really didn't know anyone going into COVID. And so stuck inside in a new country where, you know, you can't really do anything, go anywhere. And they didn't know anyone in the area, not that you sort of meant to see people anyway. Whereas for me, I still meet 100 people a day. I tell you, like, I'm exhausted when I get home from meeting so many people. And so it's very different. It is huge sacrifice, you know, that, you know, my family sort of give up for us to be here. You know, I knew in October last year that, you know, this problem is just so big, and that the opportunity is just so big, and that really there's something tremendously, you know, tremendously important that we can work on here. And so I had no hesitation. I just wanted to build. Obviously, my family, you know, had somewhat more hesitation, which is why they didn't come in June. I went and set up and sort of got going first. And, you know, if I didn't have sort of early success here, if I wasn't effectively able to network and, you know, raise capital and so forth, then we probably wouldn't have moved here sort of permanently. But obviously, you know, I did, and the rest is history.
One of the points you mentioned, or draw factors, if you will, that you mentioned in regards to moving to San Francisco was this idea of having, quite frankly, access to top-tier technical talent, top-tier talent in general, right? And that is a real reason to move here in November. And then kind of the world shuts down and remote work kind of takes over. And, you know, I do still think it'd be difficult to have access to San Francisco tech talent in Australia. Time zones are difficult. And so it does make sense for you to be in San Francisco. But now you also have access to New York tech talent, depending on how time zone friendly you are. How is your thinking in regards to the workplace evolved with COVID?
Yeah. So, you know, going into COVID, our entire team was based in SF. Now we've more than doubled the team since COVID started. So we've hired, you know, literally more people than we had before during COVID. And, you know, 50% of our team is now based outside of the Bay Area. So some still based in North America, in the US and Canada, but we also have people all around the world. We got, I think, maybe 5 countries or something. So not, you know, crazy, but still, like,
that's notable though. Yeah.
And, you know, so lots of different time zones and so forth to contend with. So we definitely have increased our sort of coverage. And the reality is we'll keep doing that. We're building a global business. We're selling into a global audience, and, you know, we have global, you know, user base now. And so I think one thing is it's just great to be represented by you know, a global team who sort of can relate to our customers and our users and so forth. But not everyone, you know, we're actually interviewing someone in Australia right now as well. And the reality is not everyone needs to be able to work at a scale of like handling billions of people, right? But our core team really does need to understand that, understand those challenges and understand how to support those many users. And that's both from a technical standpoint, from a product standpoint, from a design standpoint, from an operational standpoint. Operations is important because it's like, again, here, of all the companies in the world that have very rapidly grown to thousands of employees, right? Most of the people who manage the operations of that scale, again, physically based here, right? Because most of the companies that have reached that sort of scale are physically based here. And so it's not even just technical talent. It's just all the support of growing a business to that scale is very represented here. But again, not everyone in your team needs to be. We develop more talent, and we, you know, some like there are great engineers in Australia. They just may not have achieved that scale. There's great product people, great designers. There's great, you know, sales people and support staff. And so, in fact, our head of support is in Amsterdam. Our head of customer success is in Amsterdam. She's ex Uber, and she was
super cool
working at a large scale there as well. But she's based in Amsterdam. So geography isn't, and I think some people get annoyed about this because of the sort of Silicon Valley thing, but geography isn't what defines talent. You know, it's really just that people here just have typically worked at like much larger scales. They just have experience in that because this place just has that ecosystem. But that's really it.
Now, I think this is really interesting. Right now, I take it you are at the Fast headquarters.
I sure am. Yep. Inside our living wall number 2.
It's a great background, by the way.
Thank you.
And so this is interesting. So you are at the Fast headquarters right now. California and San Francisco is still in a partial lockdown. So what does the office look like today?
So I am to be absolutely clear about this, I'm the minimum viable operations of our business here in San Francisco. So we have a 10,000 square foot office, and I'm the only person that's in here. And I've been in here for most of the last 6 months on my own. And so I collect the mail, I make sure that, you know, the garbage bins still go out, and, you know, and everything.
You humble yourself.
Yeah.
Go back to the old days.
Yeah. And, but you know, I love working in office. Plus I've got 2 kids at home who absolutely would not let me work at home. And so I still work in the office and do that. But, you know, like my co-founder and COO, Allison, she doesn't work in the office. She like works from home most of the time. Sometimes she goes to Tahoe to another place and works from there. So, you know, it's, you know, whatever it works for us. And I love this space, and I've spent, you know, in fact, I get in here every morning at 5:30 and I work out for an hour. I actually like build it into a little gym for me, and then I have a shower, and then I just get started and go to work, and it's great. It's been a fantastic place for me to be.
Now, fill in the blank here. In 2 years, let's just say 2 years is the timeline when, let's say, COVID is no longer a problem. In 2 years, the Fast workforce looks like what?
A workforce? That's a good question. I definitely think I would expect that we're about 65 people now. I would definitely expect that in the next 2 years, we'd be about 10x that amount of people. You know, what we're doing is really large scale. I think our engineering org will definitely probably grow the most from here, but also our sort of sales and customer facing orgs will grow rapidly as well. And are starting to. There's, you know, we're in a market that's $7 or $8 trillion, you know, growing because of COVID, growing 30% quarter on quarter, exceptionally fast. But really just by like the volume of e-commerce stores is large. And then we, you know, can sell into SaaS and media and everything else. You almost can't quantify how big this opportunity is. And so really the speed of our growth is only limited by how aggressive we want to be at taking market share, and pretty aggressive is the answer.
And if COVID is no longer a problem and everyone else in San Francisco is back in the Fast HQ, is there a Fast London office? Is there a Fast Amsterdam office? Or is there just one Fast HQ with a dispersed workforce?
Yeah, so I'm actually bullish on us opening more offices all around the world, and not just like the major capital cities, I think other places too. So we, you know, we sort of really dived headfirst into this intentionally, like the week that we went into, you know, lockdown in San Francisco, and decided to kind of go all in. And during COVID, we came up with a new policy, permanent policy at Fast called Fast Flex, which means you can work from our offices, obviously, you know, permitted to like policies of the local governments and stuff. So right now, no one can work out of our SF office, but in the future, they will be able to. But so you can work out of our office, you can work from home, or you can work for anyone else in the world. You can go and sit on the beach, you know, in Thailand and work if that suits you. We really don't mind. And you can change every day. You can come in one day. Like I think of our office now as a private WeWork just for Fast employees.
I was going to say, it sounds like a co-working space to me.
Yeah, it's just like a co-working space just for us, right? So it's set up for us. It's got, you can just come in, and we got great equipment ready to go. You can come and escape, and you can have a day, half day, a week, whatever you want, all right? And we can offer more around the world because some people like working from home. Some people don't. Some people like to work from a location, but they're just physically not near Fast. And maybe another day we open up a Fast location near them. Everyone's different, right? And again, some people like to work from home, but they've got their kids home this, you know, this day, and now they can't work from home or whatever it is. And so you know, we just want to cater to the most amount of people. Everyone's different, and that's what we want to cater to. And I think that we'll get, like, we'll open ourselves up to the most amount of talent that way. And plus, it's just a nicer way to treat people.
Yeah, no, 100% agree. I hope more companies adopt that kind of fast flex model, if you will, because I think it is actually optimal for your employee base. And I think that's great. Now, talk about the importance of building up your personal brand when gearing up for the launch of Fast. Because a year ago, I didn't know who you were. And then all of a sudden, it just seemed like Fast was everywhere. And you were heavily tied to Fast as the company's chief executive officer. So how did you go about doing this? Was this something you were consciously thinking about? And how do you think it's benefited the company?
Yeah, I often say that, like, you know, if going back 12 months, 18 months, if somebody had told me we'd sort of have the profile that we have now, I wouldn't have believed them. It's just like, I wouldn't have thought that we had the sort of social following and community that we do have around Fast. And so it wasn't intentional. What I can say, I think that a big part of it is that what we're building is just one of those things that, like, just should exist, right? It's just the way that the internet should work. It just makes sense. It's a product that we all want to use. And that's us, our parents, our grandparents, our siblings, everyone, right? And when we sell into businesses, the business owners and the VP of e-commerce, they just get it. They're like, I love this product. Like, this is what I want to use everywhere. So of course, like, we want to put it on our site, right? And I think because of that sort of universality of our product, people just, like, connected with us from day one, right? Or our mission, our goal, our product. And so, you know, that we just connected with people and, you know, generally on that level. And then two is, you know, we're building a consumer network scale business. And so I knew that it means we do need to have lots of people who know about us, right? That is the idea, is that lots of people use the technology. In fact, every internet connected consumer, you know, in the world will use our technology. So of course we need to be loud, you know. If people don't know about us, then we're actually failing at building a consumer network and or any network. And so a strategy was to be loud. Initially, like, very early on, so say November last year, we, you know, proactively put out a lot of content, proactively kind of made a lot of noise with the sole goal of hiring. You know, we're in the fiercest job market in the world. We're taking on, you know, all of the world's greatest tech companies and 100 or 1,000 that you don't know, and every startup in between. And, you know, talent here, whilst there's a lot of incredible talent here, it's, they've got the pick of the company and, you know, get paid a lot of money to do what they do. And so how do we compete is, you know, well, one, they need to know who we are. And then two, they need to like what we're doing. And so that's really was our sole focus was on hiring. And we, you know, it was a successful strategy, you know, 10 or 11 months on, we got 65 of, like, the best people in Silicon Valley and around the world now working for this business and part of the team. But really it grew from there. And, you know, people, we would just tell people what we're doing and people would connect with that and ask more questions and we would engage with them. And it really just kind of grew very organically. I think that the faster we grow, the more interesting it is for, you know, for everyone too. We're very high energy, very public. And I think that, and we're building a product that people like. And so I think all of those things just resonate so well with the public and we've just gotten a lot of momentum around that.
But you're essentially a startup influencer. Like, do you like being well known, at least in the startup world?
I wouldn't ever use me an influencer in the same sense.
Okay, fair enough.
We've gotten a lot of, obviously a lot of followers, you know, high profile, but, you know, maybe individually, definitely more so as a business. And I tell you what, I like that it's helping to achieve our goals, you know, like truly, you know, building a network scale business. I tell you what, when we sell into, like, large enterprise, right, the enterprise needs to believe that people want to use Fast, right? Like, that's the sole thing that they need to believe. If they don't think the consumers know about Fast or want to use Fast, they're not using Fast. Like, why would the enterprise be, you know, installing our technology? That's the whole benefit from it. And so, you know, we work tirelessly so that everyone knows who we are and everyone wants to use Fast. And I think that we do a good job of that. And that really is what we need to be doing a good job of. So I like that we're, you know, achieving those goals and we wouldn't change it. But, you know, in terms of, you know, I definitely have, like, no hard views on, like, one caring about whether people think of me as, like, some sort of status beyond that. is I really, really enjoy what I do. I love startups. I've always been passionate about technology. I love building business. I love, you know, I love commercializing. I love product. I love solving consumer problems. And so I'm just like truly, really passionate about what I do. And I think that a lot of my whole profile is tied to that, you know, and if people connect with that, then I love it because I just get to like spend, this is the secret, you know, the magic of Silicon Valley. It's also kind of the opposite of that as well, is that it's just a whole community of people who feel the same, you know, who just so engrossed in technology and startups and business and venture capital. And like, that's why it just balloons these huge tech companies. It also is why it's such a homogenous community and so like, you know, repetitive and whatever. And I completely get all that. But the solution, I don't think, is to try and like cut that down or to have less of that. It's just like, go for a holiday, like go get away for a few months because we all need a break from it. But I it's magical to have a place that is like that.
Do you think being a founder, a well-known founder of a well-known company, makes this whole journey higher stakes? Coming up, The Ones Who Succeed continues. We'll be right back. Stick with us. Welcome back to The Ones Who Succeed. I'm Campbell Barron, and I'm joined by Fast co-founder and CEO Dom Holland. So we're going to jump right back into that conversation. Do you think being a founder, a well-known founder of a well-known company, makes this whole journey higher stakes?
I don't know. I think failure, you know, hurts everyone equally. More people are going to know if a high-profile business fails, yes. But is the stakes to the person any less? I don't know. So, you know, let's say the world ended, or I'll tell you what, the internet shut down, right? For some reason, we could no longer have the internet here in this country. That would pretty much end fast, right? That would be the end of this company. And so that would be the death of us. Now, you know, would that like ruin me personally? No, it would be horrific. And, you know, I would have to start again. But I don't know, we'll take that challenge, you know, if it ever happened to come. But I don't think that that's any different to any founder who is just like out there building their dreams and it doesn't work out.
Yeah, I mean, I think to be fair, to use your example, I think there'd be many big problems, probably bigger than the collapse of Fast if the internet were to end in the US.
Yeah.
So I don't think that would actually reflect anything in regards to the Fast journey. But I'm curious, I follow you on Instagram and have noticed you post a lot about Fast. You do a pretty solid job engaging with your audience via the Instagram Q&A feature. So kudos to you on that. But you also, you know, post the other side of you, which is you're a family guy, you're a dad, you have kids, a wife. And I'm curious how you balance the two sides of you, because earlier in this interview, you mentioned that you get to the office at 5:30 in the morning, you're doing a workout, you're showering, and then you're getting to work. And I'm curious, I'm sure you make time for your family, but how do you avoid burnout? Because that seems like it's quite a hefty set of commitments.
Yeah. So there's kind of two parts in there. In terms of like how I divide my time, Monday to Friday, my time is like very heavily put on Fast, right? So from, you know, I get up at 4:30 in the morning and I leave the house, you know, 20 minutes later and, you know, kind of get to the office, work out from 5:30, 6:30, have a coffee, have a shower, and then I get to work. And then I get home at about, you know, 6:30. And then I have some kid time, you know, we go play outside. It's luckily it's still light outside. You know, we'll have dinner, put the, you know, bathe and shower the kids, put them to bed, and then I'm out cold, you know, about 30 minutes later, and then we do it all again. That's Monday to Friday. Saturday to Sunday, I don't go in the office. I spend all the days with my family. Like, I don't do anything else. It's just completely with them. Obviously, my phone still goes all the time, but I'm just physically with my family and not sort of sitting at an office the whole time. And so that's how I spread my time. And you know, I know my daughter still, I've got a 5-year-old daughter who is forever telling me to put my phone down. And so, you know, it is hard on them.
Like, good on her.
It's not a perfect system. And I definitely wouldn't say I'm like, you know, have nailed the breakdown of like, you know, the balance of work and family and life and everything else. But, you know, what we're doing is really hard. I wouldn't even say I did the very best I could do, but you know, I try hard to sort of account for all things. And I think that all in all, we're running like pretty smoothly in all directions, right? And that to me is like a pretty good place to be. In terms of like burnout, so it's an interesting one. I really think the burnout is tied to, so obviously like if you just overwork yourself, then that's, you know, that's one thing. But the reality is I'm not overworking myself. You know, I think taking the time to do physical training and eat well and so forth, like really helps. And like, there's lots and lots of stress that comes with building a company and just like relentless problems that are involved in business and everything else. Being physically fit is very essential of being able to absorb that sort of stress. But the reality is I just legitimately like absolutely love what I do, every minute of it. And I, you know, I post about this sometimes, is that you startups are like just a series of problems. That's all it is. I can tell you, none of my team come to me all day like there to tell me good news. I'm the guy that they go to when there's bad news, right? When they need to like something's broken, something's not working, something like, you know, we're just building. And that's my job. And I love it. Like I'm here to solve problems. Like I don't want people to call me up telling me I'm doing a good job. Like call me out and tell me what needs my attention. And I think that if you don't love that, then it could get really, really hard, really, really fast. And some people like are okay with that, but they need a break after a while. Like I thrive off it and I could just like go forever. I tell you what, like through COVID, I haven't had a break in, I can't even remember the last time. I've got a personal trainer who trains me, you know, every single day. And he says to me sometimes, he's like, are you ever going to take a holiday or like have time off? And I just, you know, I love it. And I think that's a big part of burnout is that like, you know, if you get to a point, you just need a rest, make sure you go and have a rest. And, you know, I'm not at that point. I do need sun every now and then. I need a bit of tropical beach somewhere, a bit of sun, a bit of vitamin D and a bit of a refresh. But as long as I get that, I'm pretty good.
Well, I think you really touched on some very key points, which is essentially this idea of taking care of yourself, eating right, you know, getting physical activity. It seems like you're taking it to an extreme. I mean, not necessarily an extreme, but every day, 4:30, wake up. But, you know, it clearly works for you. And so, like, power to you. How many hours of sleep do you get on a weekday?
I'm just curious. My target is 6. So if I hit 6, my phone tells me I've done a good job and I hit 6. And I kind of do like maybe 80% of the time, I would say I hit about 6. So it's anywhere from like, you know, on a normal night, anywhere from like 4.5 to 6 hours. And I would say I tend to be more than the 6 hours. If my kids are like playing up and waking up in the middle of the night and whatever, I kind of get down like 4.5 because I have to go in and go into them or whatever. But typically about 6. Yeah.
And following the launch, the Fast launch on September 1st, it really seemed like you, the team, the whole Fast team, because it's not just you, the Fast team, went into that really with a running head start. And you did this virtual event and there was a lot of buzz on social media. You kind of made the rounds on all the top podcasts. And so I'm curious, how is the company feeling post-launch? And how are your users? I guess that's equally important. How are your users feeling post-launch?
Yeah. So, you know, it's really funny. It seems like there's like all this activity outside the company. I mean, there's tons of activity inside the company, but it's completely different to the activity outside the company. You know, a lot of people on Twitter will talk about like the hype around Fast or whatever. Internally, it is like the complete opposite. It's just, we're just a, like, it's like a beehive, you know, just like a whole bunch of worker bees working really hard. We're all just in here doing our jobs. And it's been like that since day one, right? Since 2019 up until today, it like actually hasn't changed. And, you know, we've got a beautiful team of like very humble, very hardworking people, and we just have a job to do. So pre-launch, at launch, during launch, you know, during launch, post-launch, it really hasn't changed. But, you know, we get louder externally. You know, how our merchants like scrambling to come on board, consumers, the second we put buttons on a site, people start using Fast Checkout to buy stuff. Like really, we've been so fortunate. Our product strategy was really strong early and hasn't changed. And we've just executed well against that. And people are using the product exactly as we hoped and expected. And, you know, merchants are onboarding exactly like we hoped and expected. And we're just trying to scale it and take it to as many sites as we possibly can. You know, the launch was like everything that we do. It's like, it's just nothing is enough, right? And we're just so hungry for more all the time. the whole team. And I think that that shows in like the way that we present ourselves, our events, our product, our, you know, we get so much stuff coming over the next, you know, 3 and 6 months. And I think that that it just shines through in this business, is that there's so much for us to do. And when it comes to the launch event, again, you know, we're building a consumer scale business. We need every business to hear about us. We need every consumer to hear about us. How can we best portray that in the COVID era? So we obviously, you know, produced a great video event. And then, you know, one, the production of the event itself, but then also like, how do we get it out there? What are all the networks we can leverage? What's all the marketing channels we can leverage? Like, and it's always like, what else can we do? Like when, you know, nothing we do is ever enough, what else can we layer on? And I think that we, yeah, executed well against that on launch day. The marketing team did a phenomenal job, but, and so did the whole business, to be honest. So, yeah.
Now, Fast is currently available on BigCommerce. That was one of your beta partners. Mm-hmm. And BigCommerce is, you know, that's a total win. But Shopify is also another valuable kind of e-commerce player. Many prominent startups run on Shopify. Is that in the roadmap?
Oh, they're not that big, are they? Shopify, they're only a small platform. Look, Shopify are very interested in owning their entire ecosystem, and in fact, you know, they've been making a lot of ways of basically eating their ecosystem. You know, they're rather than have pay later providers, they're trying to own pay later. Rather than have sort of third party checkouts, trying to own checkout. Rather than have third party subscription, now they're, you know, bring subscription in, and they're kind of doing this to their whole stack. And so a very tumultuous time for that platform, to be honest. I think they're going through what Facebook and Twitter went through 10 years ago, where they just sort of ate the whole developer communities and kind of shut it down. You know, we never used to use Twitter apps. We used to use third-party apps, and then Twitter basically took them all away. Right. Kind of what's happening on Shopify. And so it's just not a great time for us to be like, you know, really trying to get into a platform that's currently like getting rid of everyone on their platform, basically. So we're working with every other platform. We're like, soon we're rolling out multiple more platforms this year, next year, like dozens more platforms, lots of big partnerships in the works. And the reality is, the vast majority of e-commerce dollars aren't actually flowing through Shopify. Big platform and you know, I think a great service for, you know, a lot of small business. But the reality is that most e-com dollars still aren't flowing through there. The vast majority of, you know, consumers are buying things elsewhere. And so we're servicing the entire rest of the market first. But you know, always happy to engage with partners. We, you know, one of the best things about Fast is it's technology agnostic. Any platform, any device, any car, doesn't matter. Everyone can use Fast. And so, you know, we'd love to support Shopify one day if they don't eat themselves.
All right. Well, Dom, I really appreciate your time, and great to get to talk to you.
You too. Thanks so much.
That's Dom Holland, one of the ones who succeed. Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed the show, it would be amazing if you could leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. It really helps us out. Or why not tell a friend? That also helps new listeners discover the show. I really appreciate it. If you want to see clips from the show and stay up to date with what I'm working on, you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram. I'm at Campbell J. Barron. And you can find me on YouTube. My channel is my name, Campbell Barron. You've made it to the end of the show. Thanks for listening. I'm your host, Campbell Barron, and I'll be back in no time.